Welcome to Regenerative Rising's podcast series, Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change. I am your guest host, Elizabeth Candelario, and I am absolutely delighted to introduce you to Laura Storm today. Laura is the founder of Regenerators, and she spent her entire career working in the intersection between organizational development, sustainability, climate change policy, and innovation. She has started and led multiple international organizations focused on the global transformation to sustainability, including the Copenhagen Climate Council and Sustainia. Laura was awarded the title World Changer by Green Biz. She's been named one of the 30 leading women within sustainability and regeneration by Sustainable Brands. And she was selected by the World Economic Forum as a young global leader. She is the co-author with Giles Hutchins of Regenerative Leadership, the DNA of Life-Affirming 21st Century Organizations, which we will be talking about today. So I'm very excited for the Regenerative Rising audience to hear from her today. Through this podcast series, listeners have heard from many voices and many perspectives in the regenerative space. We've heard from business leaders who care passionately about using business as a force for good. Social entrepreneurs, brand builders, and retailers developing and bringing to market environmentally responsible and nutritious products. Farmers and food systems advocates providing real leadership in regenerative agriculture. Laura is a very important and needed voice to add to this conversation because her work really addresses the why. Why has humanity arrived at this point where we are witnessing these profound system failures? And the how. How can we go about building regenerative, life-affirming organizations? And not only how that pertains to our organizations, but perhaps even more importantly, how it pertains to ourselves. So welcome, Laura. How are you today?
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. It's a real honor to be here and share the regenerative voice with you. So I'm deeply grateful for inviting me in. And I'm doing good, thank you. I'm currently on my permaculture farm in Portugal, where my family and I moved during we moved here 3 months ago. It was a decision, a radical decision we made, and then we moved 3 weeks after we had made the decision. Very much kind of encouraged after the COVID-19 pandemic. We used to live in an apartment in Copenhagen and we desperately needed to take ourselves and our kids out into the countryside, be more closer to the earth. Long story short, now we're here. We've become farmers, but we can dive into that in our conversation.
There's nothing like teaching you about regeneration than living on a farm.
Exactly. How are you, Elizabeth?
Well, you know, Laura, today's a tough day. You know, I'm back in California, my beloved state of California, where 2.5 million acres have burned so far this year. And that's across multiple ecosystems, including our precious ancient redwood forests in some places. You know, all of us during this time are seeking nature as a place for solace. And we can't even go outside, or even worse, you know, many people have been evacuated. And yesterday, I got up, as I have for these last 24 years, at 8 o'clock in the morning to go for a mountain bike ride, and it was pitch black. Wow. We waited until 9:15 so that we could actually see. The sky was this bright orange all day. You know, the fires here in California, in Oregon and Washington have put so much smoke and ash up 20,000 and 30,000 feet that it's formed this barrier between the sun and the planet. And I'm sure that people that don't live here have seen those incredible eerie photos of this orange San Francisco skyline. I have bees in my backyard, and they didn't know what to do. I've never seen them behave the way they behaved yesterday. They kind of clustered around the opening of their beehive and just were so disoriented. I mean, I just, I want to share a quote, if I can find it, what happened to it, by Gavin Newsom. Oh, I'll have to find, it disappeared. But yesterday he talked about, you know, California continuing to be on the forefront of climate policy and his commitment to having the sense of urgency and sense of responsibility to address it. And I know that everybody listening to us today shares that sense of urgency and shares that sense of responsibility. So this makes our conversation, Laurie, even for me, that much more important today. And so I just really want to say thank you so much for being here and having it with us.
Thank you. Thank you for creating a space where we, because now it has never been more important than now to dare talk with the heart first and create spaces for us to have conversations where we can show all of our humanity. This is now, we need these conversations. So thank you for setting a beautiful example, Elizabeth.
I'd like to start our conversation today by asking you to provide us with a little bit of a history lesson. What are some of the underlying issues that have led to these tremendous breakdowns that we're seeing in our society today?
So I won't do a long story short because I think it actually deserves a bit of unfolding, because there's something that has been missing from my education, that has been missing from, I mean, I've spent my entire life working in the field of sustainability, really in many ways starting as an 8-year-old, where I was campaigning to raise money to buy up pieces of the rainforest. And as soon as I could go, I went to the Ecuadorian part of the Amazon to work to rebuild forests and buy up pieces of the Amazon and replant trees and all of that, and was on a journey of longing to change things at a more systemic level. So that's why I've studied business in business school, to understand how the kind of the evil machine worked from the inside out. And it was only, I think, about 4 or 5 years ago, and we can dive into why later on, but I had a major or a minor traumatic brain injury. And that meant that I was forced to be in solitude and silence for a very, very long time. And as soon as I was able to read and listen to podcasts and dive into things again, I was desperate to understand where we got things wrong. Why are we messing up so badly? And why does my field of sustainability only focus more or less on technology transfer, scaling the right solutions, on the right political mechanisms, the right financial mechanisms? Those things are incredibly important, but we are missing some of the biggest, we're missing the big point here. We're missing how we behave as human beings, how we are custodians of the planet, how we are one with nature. It's like we have separated ourselves from our true home, from our natural habitat, and we have missed our understanding of how ecosystems thrive, how they become alive. And one of the main components of how ecosystems thrive is through strong relationships, through strong diversity, partnership building, sensing in constantly, evolving new species, sensing into new territories, being adaptive, resilient. All of those things that we are not really good at. And why is that? I was desperate to really back in time. Alongside great friends that I got on the way. One of them was Giles Hutchins, that I co-authored the book with, exploring the journey of separation. Giles has written a brilliant book that listeners should all read as well, called The Illusion of Separation. But one of the kind of, to make a very long story kind of short, we have lost our connection to our natural habitat, to our home. And it's been a separation that has been, it's taken a long time. But there was something that happened around 500 years ago in the Middle Ages that none of us really know about. It's called the Little Ice Age, and it was 80 years of incredibly brutal, long, harsh summers, and even more brutal winters. So crops were failing, people were getting sick, people were starving. There was a lot of friction, a lot of kind of anxiety in society rising. And about 25 years into the Little Ice Age, the Pope, desperate to do something about this, he demanded that everyone with a close relationship to nature, because at the time it was seen that the culprit of this is really nature. Nature is harming us. Nature is against us. Nature has turned our back against us. And really, nature is an extension to the work of the devil. So all of a sudden we went from tracing back previous civilizations, even if you are in Africa or in South America or in Asia, all those previous past civilizations, they have all shared a deep honoring of nature. Their gods have been figures from nature. Everything, they all shared this notion that we are part of a greater interconnected web of life. We play a role in that. And we need to leave our nest in a way so that our offspring can thrive, and they can only thrive if the ecosystem they are dependent on is thriving as well. That was their understanding. But we separated ourselves more and more from that mindset, and instead we started to see God as something above us, like a father figure that were that would punish us if we did something wrong. God was not a part of us. God was something above us. And that was a slow and gradual process. But then during the Little Ice Age, the Pope and some event that happened there, he issued an executive order, a papal bull, demanding that all people with a close relationship to nature had to be brutally interrogated to subtract and extract key information about nature. So that was midwives. It was the kind of doctors that were at the time that knew about plant medicine and what herbs were good for that ailment and stuff like that. It was both men and women, but it was a majority of women that were midwives and were kind of like women who knew of nature's ways. So he made that wrong, and he believed, or the church created a narrative around, we need to eradicate those people. And if we succeed doing that, we will get out of this hellhole that we are in the midst of. So that created a lot of fear around being closely in tune with nature. It created a lot of fear, women in between. It created a lot of fear in general. So that was like a big chasm, a big division between human beings and nature. It was also a big kind of division between the masculine and the feminine, because that then was the beginning of 250-year-long witch hunts that brutally terrorized and tortured millions of women and killed a lot of women, also a few men. And the interesting thing is that those interrogations were led by the scientists at the time. And one of the kind of lead negotiators and lead interrogators was a man called Francis Bacon. And Francis Bacon is also seen as the father of the scientific method. And the kind of he was one of the beginning or the initiators of the scientific revolution. And it's important to say that the scientific revolution, he was then followed by Descartes and Newton. It brought us great strides. We learned so much from that. But we also, it was also infused with a belief that we were that we were above nature, that nature was something to be controlled, to be dominated, that the feminine was not important. It was also then a revolution that was very influenced by this desperate need to reduce. Because when they looked at the stars, they looked, everything was so complex. So how can we reduce complexity? How can we narrow things down? So instead of viewing things as an interconnected web of life, it was reduced to a mechanistic clockwork of things that were non-living. The world was not a living thing. It was something that we could understand by putting things on a mathematical formula. And again, it brought us great things. But it also meant that we lost our ability of seeing things as interconnected. We lose that role as being one of many species that play an important role in the web of life by catering to the nest of our offspring, by catering to the ecosystems that they are dependent on. It was also a transformation that meant that we became more and more we celebrated more and more the left brain hemisphere and kind of suppressed the right brain hemisphere. The right brain hemisphere is the part of us that is able to think an interconnected system, this holistic framework. It's also our creative, wild side of us. But instead, it was the logical brain that was celebrated for a very, very long time. And still to this day, that is what is taught in every kind of school, not every kind of school, but in the majority of the educational system today is favoring the logical brain. So we have been through this long journey of separation and division between the masculine, the feminine, humans and nature, the left brain hemisphere, the right brain hemisphere, but also our inner guidance system. We are no longer a species that is really tapped into to our intuition, to what it feels to feel good inside. We have been trained to think of success as something you achieve in the outer world. I have definitely been not a victim, but I've definitely been in circles that have been infused with this notion that you are your titles, you are your possessions, you are the figure that is on the bank account. Those kind of things is what we have celebrated as a collective. And I believe that is those answers to why are we now facing, why are we now in the midst of the sixth mass extinction? Why are we now seeing climate breaking down, delicate climate systems? Why are we losing up to 1,000 species a day? I believe we need to go to the root cause of that. And understand that we don't solve this problem alone by policy, technology, or a new financial mechanism. We need to embrace a new level of consciousness, and we need to celebrate the true humanness of us, the inner qualities of us, and we need to nurture our inner rich ecosystems. And if we succeed creating a balance in our inner ecosystems, because it's not only when we talk about the great acceleration in terms of everything has just been through a massive increase in the past few decades, from GDP to traffic, tourism, pollution, use of fertilizer, everything has just seen a rapid increase. But it's also a rapid increase in people that are incredibly stressed, anxious. The suicide rates are increasing year on year. We need to see this as the same crisis. And we need to understand that we cannot solve the problems unless we dare go within as well and create that reconnection to our outer ecosystems. What you are facing in California is so incredibly tragic. And suddenly you have in your face how much we have neglected that part of us and how we have let that tragedy happen.
Yeah. I often say too that the frenetic energy of the earth because the earth is so seeking balance, and that frenetic energy of trying to find that balance, we're biological part of that system, and we can experience it in ourselves and each other, that kind of underlying frenetic energy. I can't think of a better example or arena to see that mechanistic break things into individual components instead of seeing as a whole, this need to, this feeling of controlling nature than in agriculture. And as any good farmer knows, and now you're a good farmer too, you know, whether you're organic, biodynamic, permaculture practitioners, the key to a truly regenerative ag lies in working with the forces of nature instead of against them. In your book, you talk about the DNA model of regenerative leadership. Can you talk about that with us?
Yeah. So Giles and I, we met, I can't believe it's only 3 years ago. It feels like I've known him my entire life. But we met an important point where we were both trying to kind of create a framework for how we both have a business background and a sustainability background and have been diving really deep into regenerative wisdom, indigenous wisdom, biomimicry, circular economy, etc. And we felt that business leaders needed a framework, a holistic framework, that they could have as a tool in terms of advancing their regenerative journey. So it doesn't become sustainability metrics that you kind of, you cross a list and you become sustainable. But how can we enable business leaders across the board to start working as ecosystemic facilitators, start to sensing into the system more, and have a framework and a navigation tool that made sense in terms of regenerative business. So the DNA framework consists of three main elements: living systems design, how you design your products and services; living systems culture, how, when we base our knowledge or when we lend wisdom from permaculture, circular economy, anthropology, sociology, biology, deep ecology, etc., what can we learn from those fields in terms of how do we create thriving cultures rich of vitality? So that's the second component, so incredibly important. And the third component is often missing from any leadership book or any management book. That's what we call living systems being. That's the qualities that we need to honor and nurture more within us. As any farmer know, the kind of success of your output, it starts with the quality of your soil. Are you able to nourish a deep and rich nutrient dense soil? Sorry, I have flies everywhere. I live on a farm.
Or, so authentic, Laura.
Are you able to be a living systems being? And those kind of qualities are qualities like abundance. Don't believe in a scarcity culture. Don't believe in a zero-sum game. It's the ability to dance with every season of life, that ability to surrender to the richness of the autumn season and the winter season. We've created a corporate culture where everyone falsely believes they have to be in constant spring and summer, constantly performing, constantly on to the next thing. How can we learn the richness of retreating, of integrating our learnings through the very intense summer cycle? What did we learn here? What do I need to integrate? How can I advance myself by slowing down? It's qualities like presence, like patience, like silence, solitude. Those kind of qualities is where we believe every good thing starts. We need to embrace those qualities, but many of us have been trained to think of those as not really important or kind of woo-woo. But that is where everything begins. So those three kind of elements is the three main kind of components of the DNA model.
I really think that one of the most important contributions of your work is this emphasis on individual development as much as you emphasize organizational development. You know, we're really making this case that we can't expect to evolve our business models if we don't develop our own individual capacities. And in the book, you provide some practical guidance for how to do that. And frankly, as a practicing Buddhist, some of the techniques you suggest are very familiar to me. Can you speak a little bit more about that personal aspect, about why the self-awareness and self-development is so important?
And again, I mean, that's where good leadership really, really starts. Having that awareness about yourself as a human being, knowing where your triggers are, your shadows, your blind spots are so incredibly important. And I can't stress this enough. I mean, I was very much involved in the COP15 climate negotiations happening, that's over 10 years ago. And those negotiations, it was believed that this would be the successor to the Kyoto Protocol. There was so much hype being built around it. And I were present in many of the negotiations and saw kind of how Chinese negotiators and US negotiators and how all of this kind of, how this evolved and how so quickly things just went incredibly wrong. Because of the main leaders, main responsible negotiators and political leaders were acting like small kids, did not have any awareness around where their shadows were, their blind spots, or how they were able to create a safe space. I mean, this were human beings gathering from 192 countries to agree on a treaty that, to be completely honest, would help the Homo sapiens stay on this planet. That was what they were doing. They didn't have that realization. For them, it was all, they were all in their ego. It became a battle of egos. And everyone's just ended up kind of fleeing the scene. And those situations and seeing them firsthand was a pinpoint for me in terms of realizing how much damage we do because we have no awareness around ourselves. How we have no idea how to create safe spaces for people to truly listen. I keep fantasizing about being able to recreate those events where leaders were able to hold the space, tapping into tools like deep listening, sitting in a circle. And I know that sounds very hippie-ish, but it's not when you try it. When we are able to speak from our heart, to lower our shoulders, it's incredibly how much faster we can come to a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. But we are continuously getting in our own way again and again and again. And we see again and again and again how an ego and overdrive and how a hyper-masculine work culture is creating an incredibly toxic culture. And we see that in many companies being celebrated for being front runners in sustainability. Many of those companies have incredibly toxic cultures as well. And it is preventing their full ability to flourish, or their full potential to come through in this world. Because when the inner quality of any living system, from a cell to a community, when the cells in that community are toxic and degenerative, it will create a degenerative culture eventually. But many people don't have that awareness around how the inner is always influencing the outer and the other way around. Right. So good leadership, a great sustainability transition starts with a great level of self-awareness. And how can we create safe spaces, safe, rich cultures where people can go to work not having to wear a mask? And I don't mean the COVID-19 preventive mask, but I mean not feeling you have to play an artificial role to fit in. But how can you create those rich cultures that is dominating by or infused by rich diversity? You know, from permaculture, we talk about the importance of edge effects. When two cultures are colliding, we have an edge effect. And that can create some turbulence, but that is also where the richness is. When ecosystems collide in nature, that is where there's the richest biodiversity. And we need to learn from that in our organizational design, that we need that diversity for cultures to truly thrive. But many leaders are shying away from that because it feels more comfortable to keep hiring people that reminds them of themselves, because then they're not that challenged. So they hire people from the same educational background, from the same circles, because they have this subconscious bias. It's natural, but they don't have that awareness around, I need to go out of my comfort zone. I need to ensure I create a rich, biodiverse culture in my organization.
Right. I love that. You know, I hope that one of the positive impacts of COVID is now that we all have home offices and our cats walk in front of our computer and our children come and tug at our skirts. You know, I think it's kind of like changed that a little bit. So maybe we can remember that humanity, which we've all enjoyed experiencing with each other. And maybe that'll continue.
Our living rooms, and it is, yeah. It's kind of helped us all lower the guards and be more human.
Right.
That's my 7-year-old having a tantrum, and because that's we have had to kind of open our hearts more and lower our guards, and that has been one of the great advantages of this COVID-19.
It's certainly a lesson that we've gotten to experience, that and the world doesn't fall apart if my hair isn't perfect today. I'm at about the 30 minute mark, so I wanted to just take a quick break to remind everyone that this is Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change. I am your guest host, Elizabeth Candelario, and am speaking with Laura Storm, who is a lifelong regeneration warrior, educator, mother, and author. So I wanted to touch on one of the coolest things about your book is that it actually includes a workbook. I mean, it has a way for individuals and teams to assess their organization from a kind of a regenerative systems approach. And it suggests where to prioritize efforts for more impact. Can you give our listeners a little bit more sense of that work?
Yeah. So Jonathan and I wanted to constantly bring down what we talk about and what we teach down to earth and make it very applicable and tangible. And we wanted to constantly stress, and we do that throughout the book, that don't get overwhelmed. Just take the first step and decide what that first step could be. For example, in all of the part 3 of the book is, as you say, a workbook. That's exercises and frameworks for you to get started and for you to have as navigation tools on your regenerative journey. And often we encourage people to start focusing on how do they host their meetings, whether they are on Zoom or in the real world when we have physical meetings. How do they interact? How about starting to incorporate deep listening? And immediately people are starting to be like, oh, what is this all about? But then when they experience it firsthand, deep listening is all about being truly present with whomever you're speaking. So one of the kind of areas that we often encourage leaders to start is, let's focus on our meeting culture, because meetings are often leaving people incredibly drained. So we have all experienced these meetings where we feel drained and exhausted afterwards, and where it's infused with this need to be listened to and heard, and there's a fight for words. And we often encourage leaders to turn that culture around and start implementing deep listening. And deep listening is where you are fully present with whomever is speaking. And you can combine that with way of counsel, where you pass around a talking stick so you make sure it's not just the extrovert, the kind of very intense people that you often hear in a meeting that gets heard, but that everyone has something to say. And then you train yourself to, when someone else is speaking, you fully listen with all your senses, you are present with that person. So you don't rehearse what you want to say next. That's something we have all been guilty of, rehearsing what we want to say next, zooming completely out of the conversation and just rehearsing because we want to sound really smart and clever. So change that around so that you are more present. That also means that you more quickly can access your true authentic self, because then when it's your turn, your only role is to speak from your heart on that topic that can be on the agenda. And that could be everything from the next marketing strategy to whatever, but you create a richness and you create a culture where people have reported back that they actually leave the office space now feeling more energized than drained. So instead of going from work feeling shattered because you've just had massive input all the time and our nervous systems are simply not geared for that, we feel exhausted and we are drained, we can leave the office space feeling more connected to not only ourselves but to the people we spent so much time with, and we have actually also achieved greater results, which is often the case when we create another environment in our meetings, in our work culture. And many have reported back that they like their colleagues better now. You like people where you feel listened to and heard and valued. And it just creates a richness among in the interrelational or the inter, what is it called? The relationships in the workplace. So that's a very, very simple but brilliant way to start in terms of creating rich cultures where we feel we can be ourselves. And from a personal level, that's a great starting point as well. Start to create spaces throughout your day where you deeply listen to yourself. What do you want? What do you crave? What do you need right now? Are you actually hungry? Do you maybe need a little power nap? Do you need to go around the building? So often we don't listen to what we really need to thrive. And it sounds so simple, but it's so important. When we are not listening to ourselves, when we are constantly in that kind of high beta survival mode, which is often the case in the workspace, we are in the evolutionary gear that is incredibly important. And that is why we are still around as a species, that kind of fight or flight gear. That is genius, because when we are in that gear, we have tunnel vision, we become, and all energy goes to solving the task right at hand. The problem is that that gear is the gear that the majority of people in the workspace spend their time in. And that gear is also, from science, we know that when we are in that high beta brainwave mode, we lose our ability to be compassionate. We lose our ability to think in interconnected systems. And we lose that ability to care for one another. And that, I believe, is quite saying, also going back to where we started this conversation, our disconnection from the ecosystems that we are a part of. When we are in a constant overdrive to ticking boxes and winning goals and being a success, we lose our ability to be custodians of the planet. So we need to listen inward.
Those are some great examples, Laura. So thank you. Another thing that you said in your book that really stuck with me is that it only takes 10% of a collective, 10% of out of a group of people to really start changing behavior for the whole system. And so that's a little bit more when people are working in their companies and organizations, you know, they don't need to convince everybody. They just need to get their little pod together. Can you give some advice for folks who are listening, who want to be those regenerative change agents, about how to spark this transformation in their organizations?
Yeah, and that is something that we also talk a lot about in the Regenerator's Journey, a 12-week program that I'm running with a friend and colleague of mine, Jenny Anderson, because we see so many people across the planet longing for being regenerators. And we need to come together. We need to hold each other's hand and we need to learn from each other, tap into the collective intelligence, learn from each other's successes and failures. So yes, the 10% comes from social studies that a transformation starts to happen when we reach 10% of a population. A movement starts to happen, like Occupy Wall Street, the Arab Spring, Extinction Rebellion. Those kind of things have started to really take off when we reach that percentage. And it's one of those things that keep me going, because that's tangible. I can relate to that. I can look around in my company and see, okay, we are 100 people. That means I only need to gather a group of friends of 10. Let's start talking about these things. Let's start talking about how can we become regenerative catalyst of this organization, and how can we create those positive ripple effects that will take this organism, this living system, on a regenerative journey. So what we encourage to the journey travelers, and what they learn from each other throughout this kind of 12-week journey, is, for example, some have experimented with suggesting. This was a line manager in a big chemical company that was desperate for change. How can I get permission to have a Tuesday discussion club where I gather my colleagues and I present to them some of the kind of wisdom pillars we have been through in the regenerator's journey, and have a discussion around those elements, or encourage them to read some of the chapters of the regenerative leadership book, and let's have a discussion around that. How could we integrate some of these tools, some of these practices in our organization? And what he experienced was that unleashed a lot of creativity. What we see in many rigid, hierarchical, mechanistic organizations is that there's a lot of human potential being lost in the divisions, because it's so rigid to have a new idea come through that many people just kind of, they kind of become more and more dead. They just go to work, they clock in, they just do their 9 hours and they leave. But what he experienced was the light in people's eyes when he created a safe space for having these important conversations. How do we in this chemical company become stewards of the planet? What can we do? How can we be positive change agents? How can we become regenerators? And that creates agency. It activates potential. And it's sort of like, as soon as you keep, you just get it going, you create that movement, that traction for the ripple effects to create a little mini movement within the organization. And I haven't talked to him for about 6 weeks, so I don't know how it goes now, but when I talked to him the last time, he was very excited about that. And that was one of the ideas that he got from his fellow journeyers. And the reason that Jenny and I created the Regenerators journey is that we need community now more than ever. We need to come together across profession, age, nation, and learn from each other. Because a regenerator is not necessarily an HR professional or a designer. We need regenerators on all levels, in all fields, in all nations, and we need to learn from each other and tap into that collective intelligence that they can offer. I'm going to stop myself there because I can just keep on going.
Well, I'm really glad you brought up your organization, Regenerators. And I really wanted to ask you, how can the people listening today plug into the work that you're doing?
So Regenerators is designed as an ecosystem. So I will never be the CEO, and I will never call myself a CEO, and I don't function like one. We are an ecosystem of professionals, each in our own right, coming together, forming projects. So Jazz and I did one project with the book, and we do a lot of kind of coaching and help a lot of companies transform to regeneration. Jenny and I really shared a passion around the importance of movement, of creating a movement, a community of regenerative practitioners, of helping people connect the dots so they could advance their practice quicker. because we are lending those building blocks to them and making it easier for them to really be regenerative catalyst. Jenny has an amazing corporate background as well and has been on a similar regenerative journey the past 5-7 years. So you can tap into the I'm talking about the regenerators ecosystem, because that's important in terms of where you can access us. You can go to our website and you can have a reading list of great books to read for regenerators. That's one place you can start. You can listen to some of the podcasts that we have shared there. You can read the regenerative leadership book. You can also read some of the other books that people in the ecosystem has written. Natural Intelligence is a book that just came out by Lynn Gorison. Tamsin has written Teaming, just come out with another book. So there's plenty of things to get started. Jenny and I wanted to create a journey, because we sense the need for journeying together with people, learning alongside people. So many people are getting epiphanies day by day, and they're longing for people to share this with, and longing for people to have the same kind of reference point when they're starting to get these epiphanies that, yes, it's true, and how, oh, yeah, I can learn from you, and you can learn from me, and creating that kind of community. So yeah, there are many entry points if you are inspired by regenerative wisdom. And we have made a lot of that accessible to on our website. So that's where I would encourage people to start.
Fantastic. One step at a time. So our hour is closing in. And I guess what I really want to ask you as the last question is there anything that you want to share with people that I haven't asked you so far?
There's probably a lot of things, but I think we've covered a lot of ground, and we have talked about the most important thing, which is starting with yourself, but also be kind to yourself and be true to yourself. And I honestly believe that once we start to let go of roles and titles and masks that we have given ourselves as we have journeyed through life, I truly believe that the essence of every human being, and I may sound really naive right now, but I truly believe that the essence of all of us is to be custodians of our home. But there are so many things that we have not been taught on our way. And when I look around people today, I see a lot of wounded children. I see a lot of adults that are just truly wounded children. So how can we start with our own kids? And how can we start to nourish ourselves as if we were children? And how can we reclaim some of the wisdom of our ancestors that we were not taught in school, that my parents and my grandparents were not taught in school? But how can we be the generation that is reclaiming some of that ancestral knowledge and passing it on to our kids on a collective journey where we are traveling alongside, not above our children, but alongside our children, and holding a safe space for them to tap into their genius and their role as custodians and earth regenerators?
I don't want to be a spoil. This is a bit of a spoiler alert, I guess. But you ended the book by summarizing it in one word, which was love, which really touched me. And I raised my children with the expression, love is the answer to everything. So, Laura, I want to thank you so much for your incredible contributions to this journey that we are all on. And I just want to remind everybody, you're listening to Regenerative Rising's podcast series, Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change. I'm Elizabeth Candelario. This is the fabulous Laura Storm. Thank you all for joining us here today.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. Thank you.
The Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change podcast series is produced by At the Epicenter, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. The podcast and video recordings are made possible by the generous support of people like you. Make a tax-deductible donation or sign up as a monthly supporter by visiting at theepicenter.com/donate. Support packages start at $1 per month. The podcast series is also sponsored by several corporate and organization sponsors. To become a podcast sponsor, visit theepicenter.com/contact to let us know of your interest. If you found this podcast episode insightful and meaningful, please pass it on by sharing it with a friend or colleague who will also enjoy it. Thank you for tuning in, for your support, and for activating change.